Good morning, everybody. It's nice to be back with you. And I'd like to say thanks to Liz for filling in for me. Today I have a story for you from the book A Little Aloud, which I've used before. Now, I must admit, I'm not a great reader of Charles Dickens. I do find him hard to read. I mean, I like Great Expectations and David Copperfield, but this is the story I'm reading today. It's called Senior Moments, and it's from Pickwick Papers. Now, I've never read Pickwick Papers, but it's a very amusing little story, I think, because Mr. Pickwick seems to be suffering from a senior moment, a condition which I'm very familiar, and I probably think some of you are too. So I hope you enjoy it. Pickwick Papers. Samuel Pickwick, Esquire, is a portly, affable, and reasonably well-off man. He is founder and president of the Pickwick Club. He and the other members, Mr. Nathaniel Winkle, Mr. Augustus Snodgrass, and Mr. Tracy Tupman, make journeys through England and report their findings to the rest of the club members. Sam Weller is Pickwick's personal servant, and in this extract they're staying at an inn in Ipswich, where Samuel Pickwick has been sitting up late after dinner talking to a fellow guest. Mr. Pickwick sat himself down in a chair by the fire and fell into a train of rambling meditations. His mind wandered and flew off at a tangent, and then it came back to the Great White Horse at Ipswich with sufficient clearness to convince Mr. Pickwick that he was falling asleep. So he roused himself and began to undress when he recollected he had left his watch on the table downstairs. Now, this watch was a special favourite with Mr. Pickwick, having been carried about beneath the shadow of his waistcoat for a greater number of years than we feel called upon to state at present. The possibility of going to sleep, unless it was ticking gently beneath his pillow or in the watch pocket over his head, had never entered Mr. Pickwick's brain. So, as it was pretty late now, and he was unwilling to ring his bell at that hour of the night, he slipped on his coat, of which he had just divested himself, and taking the japanned candlestick in his hand, he walked quietly downstairs. The more stairs Mr. Pickwick went down, the more stairs there seemed to be to descend, and again and again. When Mr. Pickwick got into some narrow passage and began to congratulate himself on having gained the ground floor, did another flight of stairs appear before his astonished eyes. At last he reached a stone hall, which he remembered to have seen when he entered the house. Passage after passage did he explore, room after room did he peep into. At length, as he was on the point of giving up the search in despair, he opened the door of the identical room in which he had spent the evening and beheld his missing property on the table. Mr. Pickwick seized the watch in triumph and proceeded to retrace his steps to his bedchamber. If his progress downward had been attended with difficulties and uncertainty, his journey back was infinitely more perplexing. Rows of doors, garnished with boots of every shape, make and size, branched off in every possible direction. A dozen times did he softly turn the handle of some bedroom door which resembled his own, when a gruff cry from within of, "Who's the devil's that?" or "What do you want here?" caused him to steal away on tiptoe with perfectly marvellous celerity. He was reduced to the verge of despair when an open door attracted his attention. He peeped in. Right at last. There were the two beds, whose situation he perfectly remembered, and the fire still burning. His candle, not a long one when he first received it, had flickered away in the draughts of air through which he had passed, and sank into the socket as he closed the door after him. "No matter," said Mr. Pickwick, "I can undress myself just as well by the light of the fire." The bedstead stood one on each side of the door, and on the inner side of each was a little path terminating in a rush-bottom chair, just wide enough to admit of a person's getting into or out of bed on that side, if he or she thought proper. Having drawn the curtains of his bed on the outside, Mr. Pickwick sat down on the rush-bottom chair and leisurely divested himself of his shoes and gaiters. He then took off and folded up his coat, waistcoat and neckcloth, and slowly drawing on his tasselled nightcap, secured it firmly on his head by tying beneath his chin the strings by which he had always attached to that article of dress. It was this moment that the absurdity of his recent bewilderment struck upon his mind. Throwing himself back into the rush-bottom chair, Mr. Pickwick laughed to himself so heartily that it would have been delightful to any man of well-constituted mind to have watched the smiles that expanded his amiable features as they shone forth beneath the nightcap. "It's the best idea," said Mr. Pickwick to himself, smiling as he almost cracked the nightcap strings. "It is the best idea, my losing myself in this place and wandering about these staircases, that I have ever heard of. Droll, droll, very droll." Here Mr. Pickwick smiled again, a broader smile than before, and he was about to continue the process of undressing in the best possible humour, when he was suddenly stopped by a most unexpected interruption, to wit, the entrance into the room of some person with a candle, who, after locking the door, advanced to the dressing table and set down the light upon it. The smile that played on Mr. Pickwick's features was instantly lost in the look of the most unbounded and wonder-stricken surprise. The person, whoever it was, had come in so suddenly and with so little noise that Mr. Pickwick had no time to call out or oppose the entrance. Who could it be? A robber? Some evil-minded person who had seen him come upstairs with a handsome watch in his hand, perhaps? What was he to do? The only way Mr. Pickwick could catch a glimpse of his mysterious visitor with the least danger of being seen himself was by creeping onto the bed and peeping out from between the curtains on the opposite side. To manoeuvre, he accordingly resorted. Keeping the curtains carefully closed with his hand so that nothing more of him could be seen than his face and nightcap, and putting on his spectacles, he mustered up courage and looked out. Mr. Pickwick almost fainted with horror and dismay. Standing before the dressing glass was a middle-aged lady in yellow curler papers, busily engaged in brushing what ladies call their back hair. However, the unconscious middle-aged lady came into that room, it was quite clear that she contemplated remaining there for the night, for she had brought a rushlight and shade with her, which, with praiseworthy precaution against fire, she stationed in a basin on the floor, where it was glimmering away like a gigantic lighthouse in a particular small piece of water. "Bless my soul," thought Mr. Pickwick. "What a dreadful thing," said the lady, and went into Mr. Pickwick's head with automation-like rapidity. "I never met with anything so awful as this," thought poor Mr. Pickwick, the cold perspiration starting in drops upon his nightcap. "Never. This is fearful." It was quite impossible to resist the urgent desire to see what was going on forward. So out went Mr. Pickwick's head again. The prospect was worse than before. The middle-aged lady had finished arranging her hair, had carefully enveloped it in a muslin nightcap with a pleated border, and was gazing pensively on the fire. "This matter is growing alarming," reasoned Mr. Pickwick to himself. "I can't allow things to go on in this way. By the self-possession of that lady, it is clear to me that I must have come into the wrong room. If I call out, she'll alarm the house. But if I remain here, the consequences will be still more frightful." Mr. Pickwick, it is quite unnecessary to say, was one of those modest and delicate-minded of mortals. The very idea of exhibiting his nightcap to a lady overpowered him, but he had tied those confounded strings in a knot, and, do what he would, he couldn't get it off. The disclosure must be made. There was only one other way of doing it. He shrunk behind the curtains and called out very loudly, "Ahem!" That the lady started at this unexpected sound was evident by a falling up against the rushlight shade. That she persuaded herself it must have been the effect of imagination was equally clear. For when Mr. Pickwick, under the impression that she had fainted away stone dead with fright, ventured to peep out again, she was gazing pensively on the fire as before. "Most extraordinary female, this," thought Mr. Pickwick, popping in again. "Ahem!" "Good gracious," said the middle-aged lady, "what's that?" It's only a gentleman, ma'am," said Mr. Pickwick from behind the curtains. "A gentleman," said the lady with a terrified scream. "It's all over," thought Mr. Pickwick. "A strange man," screeched the lady. Another instant and the house would be alarmed. Her garments rustled as she rushed towards the door. "Ma'am," said Mr. Pickwick, thrusting out his head in the extremity of his despair. "Ma'am." Now, although Mr. Pickwick was not actuated by any definite object in putting out his head, it was instantaneously productive of a good effect. The lady, as we've already stated, was near the door. She must pass it to reach the staircase, and she would most undoubtedly have done this by this time, had not the sudden apparition of Mr. Pickwick's nightcap driven her back into the remotest corner of the apartment, where she stood staring wildly at Mr. Pickwick, while Mr. Pickwick, in turn, stared wildly at her. "Wretch," said the lady, covering her eyes with her hands, "what do you want here?" "Oh, nothing, ma'am, nothing, nothing whatever, ma'am," said Mr. Pickwick earnestly. "Nothing," said the lady, looking up. "Nothing, ma'am, upon my honour," said Mr. Pickwick, nodding his head so energetically that the tassels of his nightcap danced again. "I'm always ready to sink, ma'am, beneath the confusion of addressing a lady in my nightcap." Here the lady hastily snatched off hers. "But I can't get it off, ma'am." Here Mr. Pickwick gave a tremendous tug in proof of the statement. "It is evident to me, ma'am, now that I have mistaken this bedroom for my own. I had not been here 5 minutes, ma'am, when you suddenly entered it." "If this improbable story be really true, sir," said the lady, sobbing violently, "you will leave it instantly." "I will, ma'am, with great pleasure," replied Mr. Pickwick. "Instantly, sir," said the lady. "Certainly, ma'am," interposed Mr. Pickwick very quickly. "Certainly, ma'am, I'm very sorry, ma'am." And Mr. Pickwick, making his appearance at the bottom of the bed, to have been the innocent occasion of this alarm and emotion, "deeply sorry, ma'am." The lady pointed to the door. One excellent quality of Mr. Pickwick's character was beautifully displayed at this moment under the most trying circumstances. Although he had hastily put on his hat over his nightcap, after the manner of the old patrol, and although he carried his shoes and gaiters in his hand, and his coat and waistcoat over his arm, nothing could subdue his native politeness. "I am exceedingly sorry, ma'am," said Mr. Pickwick, bowing very low. "If you are, sir, you will leave the room," said the lady, "at once." "Immediately, ma'am, this instant, ma'am," said Mr. Pickwick, opening the door and dropping both his shoes with a crash in doing so. "I trust, ma'am," resumed Mr. Pickwick, gathering up his shoes and turning round to bow again. "I trust, ma'am, that my unblemished character and the devoted respect I entertain for your sex will please as some slight excuse for this." But before Mr. Pickwick could conclude the sentence, the lady had thrust him into the passage and locked and bolted the door behind him. Whatever grounds of self-congratulation Mr. Pickwick might have had for having escaped so quickly and quietly from this late awkward situation, His present position was by no means enviable. He was alone in an open passage in a strange house in the middle of the night, half dressed. It was not to be supposed that he could find his way in perfect darkness to a room which he had been wholly unable to discover with a light. And if he made the slightest noise in his fruitless attempts to do so, he stood every chance of being shot at, and perhaps killed, by some wakeful traveller. He had no resource but to remain where he was until daylight appeared. So after groping his way a few paces down the passage, and, to his infinite alarm, stumbling over several pairs of boots in doing so, Mr. Pickwick crouched into a little recess in the wall to wait for the morning, as philosophically as he might. He was not destined, however, to undergo this additional trial of patience, for he had not long been ensconced in his present concealment when, to his unspeakable horror, a man, bearing a light, appeared at the end of the passage. His horror was suddenly converted into joy, however, when he recognised the form of his faithful attendant. It was indeed Mr. Samuel Weller, who, after sitting up late in conversation with the boots who were sitting up for the mail, was now about to retire to rest. "Sam," said Mr. Pickwick, suddenly appearing before him, "where's my bedroom?" Mr. Weller started at his master in the most emphatic surprise, and it was not until the question had been repeated three several times that he turned round and led the way to the long-sought apartment. "Sam," said Mr. Pickwick as he got into bed, "I have made one of the most extraordinary mistakes tonight that that ever were heard of." "Very likely, sir," replied Mr. Weller dryly. "Well, I think Mr. Pickwick was having a senior moment, as I said, and this reminded me of the poem by Joseph about getting old, and she calls it warning. When I'm an old woman, I shall wear purple with a red hat, which doesn't go and doesn't suit me. And I shall spend my pension on brandy and a volume of summer gloves and satin sandals and say we've got no money for butter. I shall sit down on the pavement when I'm tired and gobble up samples in shops and press alarm bells, and run my stick along the public railings, and make up for the sobriety of my youth. I shall go out in my slippers in the rain, and pick the flowers in other people's gardens, and learn to spit. You can wear terrible shirts, and grow more fat, and eat 3 pounds of sausages at a go, or only bread and pickle for a week, and hoard pens and pencils and beer mats and things in boxes. But now we must have clothes that keep us dry and pay our rent and not swear in the street and set a very good example for the children. We must have friends to dinner and read the papers. But maybe I ought to practice a little now, so people who know me and not too shocked and surprised when suddenly I am old and I start to wear purple." I think it's time I started to wear purple, because I can really empathise with that lady. You know, where you think to yourself, what have I come in here for? You go out again, you go, oh yeah, now I remember. It's one of those senior moments. It's been lovely to be back with you, and I hope to see you again soon. Bye for now.